Hi, I'm Corey Raven. What's your name?
Irene Lignos.
Irene and I want to welcome you to Crosstalk Podcasts, where we do our part to inspire recovery from addiction and discover a better way. Whether you're considering a life free from substance dependency or are already on the path, Crosstalk is here for you. Each episode, we do a deep dive into the experiences and stories of people who have walked the walk of recovery alongside experts in the field to enhance our understanding of addiction and recovery. Our mission is simple: to help you navigate the challenges and celebrate the victories of your personal journey to a better life. So buckle up and let's hit the road as we embark on this transformative journey together. This is Crosstalk Podcasts. So welcome, everyone. I want to say good afternoon to Irene and to Lauren. We're here together doing a three-way crosstalk.
Grateful to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited for you to be here to share with us your story of recovery. And I guess let's jump in. Where do you want to start?
So hi, I'm Lauren. I'm an alcoholic. I've met you two lovely people from Karen that I was so lucky to find. And I'll talk about that. But I guess I'd like to start from the beginning. I was born in El Paso, Texas. I am the product of a one-night stand. But my mom told me when she was 8 months pregnant, she caught my dad holding a bag of flour in the bedroom. And my mom was like, "What the hell are you doing?" And my dad said, "I'm practicing how to hold her," right? They were in college, and immediately when my dad knew about me, he went to his guidance counselor and asked, "What trajectory should I take to have the best support for my family?" So he changed his major to accounting. He's now a very successful CFO. But that was just how to care for me was the only thing in his life from the moment he knew about my existence. So I was born in El Paso, Texas.
But I want to ask you a question. So your dad, essentially his whole life became centered around the fact that he was going to have a little girl. Well, how did that make you feel when you found out about all those things?
Oh, he's my best friend, my biggest cheerleader. I've always had a really close connection with my father, even though we're so different. You know, he's the accountant. He's very logical. And I always say, like, he grounds me back to earth, but I remind him the beauty of the stars. So we're like the yin and yang of each other in that aspect. But
I love that.
Yeah, him and my brother are one of the two people that I found in this world where you can just sit in silence and you still felt like you communicated, you know?
I love that. Yeah. I love that he changed everything just to be that he wanted to be the best provider possible. I think that you're so lucky to have had that.
Yeah.
You know, not many women do, you know, especially products of one night stands, you know, you think like, so that's awesome.
Yeah, I love him very much. And I say that to emphasize the love for my parents that I had. And I always thought I had a great childhood, right? Like, always had a roof over my head, always had food to eat. My dad obviously loved me. My mother did too. They did everything they could to make sure that we were well-rounded children. I also have two younger siblings.
Now, they got married and started a family together.
Yes.
Okay, so then the family started with you.
Yes. Yes, I'm the eldest. One of my earliest memories was when I was six. I always say my dad drugged me to Florida against my will. We get here and I say, "Dad, like, where's the mountains? Where's the coyotes? I love the snow," right? To which he replied, "Well, we don't have any of those things anymore, sweetheart, but we have the beach and we have Disney World." And that was enough to quell me for a little bit. But I always felt like a fish out of water in Florida. I had never felt like I had truly belonged, even from 6 years old, in any friend group, with any one friend, within a classroom, within a softball group. None of it. I always felt like I didn't belong. My parents really loved me and gave me everything that I needed. And I always thought that trauma was somebody dragging you into an alley and beating you, or you had a loved one die, or you were in a plane crash. it had never occurred to me until recently in sobriety that, you know, I had a lot of traumas, even amidst the amazing childhood that I had grown up with. So
moving, couldn't that be considered?
Exactly. My heart always stayed in El Paso. It never felt like it was here. This little voice deep inside of me was always saying, this is temporary. You will go back. And I still hear that, you know. But anyway, so my parents moved us here. And by fourth grade, they were getting a divorce. Now, I am extremely proud of my intuition. Like, it has been a motherfucker. Like, it has always been right. It's always been strong. And I remember in that year before their divorce, every time I would walk past my parents' bedroom, I would look for my dad's alarm clock. I don't know why, but the alarm clock was just so important to me. I would walk by and see it. And this one day, my mom takes us bowling and everything's fine. Like, it's the same Saturday that she's always taken us bowling. But for some reason, the minute I get home, the whole drive to the house, I was thinking about that alarm clock. And the minute I get home, I run upstairs and it's gone. And I run into my dad's closet, everything's gone. And I just remember screaming, where's dad, right? So my parents went through a divorce and I was always told, you know, this happens to a lot of children. This happens to a lot of families. It's okay.
So you discovered your father left and no one said dad is leaving?
No, I just had this hunch. And when I got home, when I saw the alarm clock was gone, that's how I knew.
And you said, mom, where's dad? What did she say?
She said, he's moved out, sweetie. And then did the whole parents get divorced. A lot of children go through this. You'll be okay.
There was no talk beforehand?
No.
No, you know, sit down the kids and discuss?
No, but you know, me as a child, even at 6 years old, you know, seeing the fights, seeing the love lost between two people, like I knew, right? And even before this divorce, I found out my mom was married before my dad. I remember my grandma told me, and I went ballistic. I had to get my mom on the phone right then and there. This isn't true, right, mom? Like, no, it's not true. Like, dad is the love of your life. There's no way you could have even thought another man was the love of your life. But she said that was true, that she had a marriage before my father. And I think in then that instant, you know, that fairy tale that they tell us, like, you have this one person for you that fate has matched you with. They're yours. They'll love you forever. You'll love them forever. Like, in that moment, I realized that wasn't true.
I mean,
you know, so when this divorce happened, it's like my heart was already broken with the concept of, like, sometimes people just aren't meant to be together. And that shattered me. You know, I feel like I'm an Aphrodite at heart. Love is the most important thing to me. Right. Like, you know, you have all these dimensions of health. You have all these dimensions in our lives. And whenever my love isn't healthy, like, that's when everything is just catastrophically affected. Right. Like, if my career is going down, like, it's OK. I know I'll find something else and all that. But if I'm having trouble in my love life, that's when it causes real issues for me.
So did he live close by? I mean, I'm sure you have some of the same questions I have. You know, did you, you say you're so close to him, you know,
yeah.
When you speak of him, it's like, with, you know, I'm a daddy's girl too. So I see that in you, you know, did you still have like time with dad?
Oh, absolutely. So they remained close. They just went into separate houses. They're like a 20-minute drive from each other. So it was pretty easy. We did 1 week with my mom, 1 week with my dad, and so on. Became too much on my dad. So it ended up 70% of the time being with mom, about 30 with him. Being with dad became a little difficult. We got a stepmother whom I love dearly. I love her dearly. She did the best that she knew how, but she was a military mom, right? Like, she was in the Air Force. So the household didn't feel like somewhere you could get home and just take your shoes off, right? If I had a dollar for every time I said to my siblings, don't make dad, mom, Val mad, I wouldn't have to work a day in my life. I just wanted to keep the peace in each household. So over on my dad's side, it was make sure everything's clean, everything's perfect, everything's pristine, right? or else all hell breaks loose. And then the same thing was over at my mom's. I remember I would just be sitting on the couch like any 10-year-old would, and she was going through so much stress of the divorce. And she's from Mount Sterling, Kentucky. She met my dad in El Paso, Texas. Mm-hmm. She's never had like a real serious career job before. So now alone in South Florida, like having to build from the ground up with three kids, you know, she wouldn't express that to us. So all we got was the anger and the frustration and the fear that she had. So I'd just be sitting on the couch, and all of a sudden she'd come barreling down, slamming, throwing, screaming, like, get the fuck up. We're going to clean this house right now, kind of thing. So when I say, like, I always thought trauma was, you know, being in a plane crash or being drugged in an alley. Like, it had never occurred to me that I had actually been through traumas. And, you know, people semi-acknowledge it, like, oh, yeah, your parents are going through a divorce, but it happens to so many people. You're going to be okay, right? But I was never allowed to truly feel that despair and that anguish. So I got so good at suppressing everything. So every time I had a bad feeling, I was upset or I was sad or I was angry, I would just shove it all down, right? I never knew how to, I say, dance with them, right?
It sounds like you kind of took on this like parental role.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I did, which caused...
The older of three.
Yeah.
So they looked up to you and you had to provide them as well as take care of these old people. Who was taking care of you?
Yeah. Yeah, I put a lot of strain on me and my siblings' relationships, which we've reconciled. But yeah, that was really hard on me, you know, dealing with everything I was going through, suppressing those emotions, yet still having to make sure that there was peace in the household.
Did you have anybody to go to?
Not really. Not really. I channeled a lot of it in school, right? I was always the top student from kindergarten on up to college. I was always top of the class. And I feel in that way, that was a way to please the teachers, right? I held so much, like teachers were really important to me. I looked up to them very highly, looked for their support, their appreciation. And it really hurt when they didn't, right? I remember in fifth grade, I was tall, you know, overweight. My teacher, though, she was very short and petite. And no matter what I did, she would always favor the short, petite girls. But anyway, as far as friends, no, I just, like, I never felt like I really belonged with anybody. I never felt like people truly loved and appreciated me.
Well, the teachers gave you good grades, which gave you approval, which made you feel like you were doing something positive, whereas in all the other aspects, you know, you couldn't do enough.
Yeah, exactly. But then by middle school, because I was an overweight, I was a heavy set child. I was 180 pounds by sixth grade. And
but you're pretty tall, just to add. You must have grown into your height and everything.
Yeah. I remember I had this one moment. I was sitting on the school bus. It was the beginning of eighth grade. And I thought to myself, I want a good high school experience. This is a once in a lifetime thing. We only go through high school once. And I want to feel confident and I want to feel loved. So I knew I had to lose the weight. And in that year, I had lost about 50 pounds, give or take. Worked my butt off, literally. I was at the gym all the time. I really started researching health and wellness, diet, nutrition, exercise. And it all started well enough, but it inevitably landed me in a pretty bad eating disorder.
I can relate heavily to that and how much pain there is like in doing all that research at that age, exactly at that age. And, you know, how did that make you feel? I mean, I know how it made me feel, but how did that make you feel that you had to like, you equated like, you know, that you had to be thin for it to be fun?
I mean, it was awful. It was, you know, having to change, you know, my outer self in order to, because I thought I would finally feel welcomed by somebody. You know, I did have a crush on a guy and I was doing it specifically for him to find out that summer that now he's dating the girl with the biggest boobs in the class. Like, okay. But I was still really proud of myself, you know, for what I had done. And by the start of high school, I still didn't feel that confidence. I didn't feel exactly, you know, what I had wanted to feel.
But here you are, you're just starting high school.
Yeah.
And you don't have anybody teaching you any of this stuff. It made some sense. You're sitting on the bus. You feel, you know, less than because you're overweight. You know, you're figuring it out yourself. It made some sense to somebody who's 13, 14.
Yeah.
Why not? You know, that might work.
Yeah, absolutely. And throughout high school, my eating disorder really spiraled. You know, my grades were up here, but my eating disorder was really, really keeping me down. And I didn't really know it at the time, right? Like, I thought I was doing the best thing for myself. Until I got to college, I was in every college except engineering because I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. But I landed on health education and behavior. And I loved it because it was every dimension of health. So I got to learn all about that. And honestly, I had no idea why I chose it. I just chose it because that's the things that I love studying, right? But as far as, you know, job prospects, I had no idea what I was going to do with it. Like, there are health educators out there, but they're pretty few and far between, especially in Gainesville, where I went to school. So my internship for school was a teacher at a child development research center called Baby Gator. And I loved it. I love those ages because they change so rapidly. Mm. And they also have that like silent communication. I love it.
I mean, your face just lit up.
Yeah. I mean, like, 1 week, like, you know, one of them's having spatial ability problems. I tailor all my lesson plans that week for him. And then by Friday, he's got it. All right, next week, let's move to Maya. You know, that's right. Just how fast they can truly grow. I do believe I'm a teacher at heart, but I feel like I can do that with anything that I do, right? But I stayed there because they hired me as a full-time teacher after, except you can't live off $10.50 an hour. So I still kept my job as a waitress, which that was funny. I had gotten my job as a waitress about 2 years prior to graduation because I got four random roommates. It was the scariest thing I'd ever done up until that point. But they ended up being the best friends I had had, like, ever.
And by this point, had you had any sort of like substance issues? Were you drinking?
No.
Wow. So no. It was all like eating disorder related behaviors.
Yeah. So I truly feel like I'm an addict in so many senses. Nicotine, eating disorder, myriad of eating disorders, alcohol. Even when I was a child, I'd get home from school, I'd do my homework, and then I'd get in bed, but like to the point where I could just get out of bed and like all my pillows, like the bed was still made. Right. And my mom would walk in like, Thorne, it's 5:30. What are you doing in bed? And I'm like, I'm just trying to be as productive as possible. Like, I got everything done and now I'm in bed. Now I'm going to get sleep and then we're going to wake up. And like,
it's a control thing.
Yeah. Huge
just
control
like
thing.
An eating disorder. It's all about, well, you couldn't control your surroundings, you know? So you're like trying to control what you can.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. But I started working at a restaurant and that was the first time I felt like I belonged somewhere. Mm-hmm. These were my people. This was my tribe. And now to come to find out, like, we have a few similar behaviors and tendencies. Probably why.
Like, but addiction.
Yeah. So yeah, workaholism, all of that stuff. Mm. But I was so happy at Chewy's. And it's like a Tex-Mex restaurant. Everything's handmade, homemade, no microwaves or anything. And I felt like I was back in El Paso because it was a bunch of Spanish speakers. It was green chilies everywhere. I just felt like I was back in Texas. And I loved it. I loved it so much. So when I graduated and became a teacher, I was still working there at nights and it became too much for me. So I just stayed as a waitress. My boyfriend at the time, I remember when I told him about this, I was going to quit being a teacher and I was going to become a waitress full time. He looks at me all worried and is like, well, you're going to find something else, right? You're not just going to be a waitress. You're going to go back to school or something, right? And that just like struck a chord in me. Like, so my identity, my lovability is based on what I do, right? Mm-hmm. And at this point in my life, everybody else was always correct, right? I had to morph myself into their box of what they said life was. So I took that, oh, if I'm just a waitress, then I'm a nobody. I'm a piece of shit, right? Like, got to go back to school, got to do something. But I was with him for a few years as just a waitress. And he was getting his PhD in chemical engineering. So how could I possibly, like, compare? And I struggled with it. He gave me an ultimatum. I ended up moving to Kentucky for a year to be with my mom. Drinking still didn't get better. So that's when I learned you can change your surroundings. It's still not going to change your behaviors. And then that wasn't working out. Moved back to South Florida in with my dad. And he said, Lauren, I don't want you to do a damn thing. I want you to lay here and stare at that wall for as long as you need to do. You can take like at least 6 months, right? Like just be here and just figure something out, right? And I was grateful for that, but I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. So within 3 days, I said, Dad, I'm going back to Gainesville. I'm going back to school. So I went to acupuncture school and I loved it. Am I in a lot of debt for it to this day? Yes. But would I take any of it back? No. I really loved being there and I really loved doing it. And one of the reasons I made that decision was I knew my drinking was bad. I knew there was something wrong, right? I didn't know what exactly. I didn't know why I was drinking. I just knew there was something wrong. And I thought, well, you know, my drinking didn't start until after college. You know, I got this existential, like, what the hell am I doing? I can't just be a waitress, but I have a health education degree. Like, what am I going to do? Like, I needed to pull something like out of my ass, you know? But so I was like, I need to go back to school. That's what I need to do.
And the drinking started at that restaurant job?
Yes. But it really hit and started to impact my life, like DUIs, like really interfering with my life after I graduated college.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm back in school, but the drinking's still horrible. I remember, I still think about this sometimes and I can feel it all over again. I was in class one day and I thought it'd be great to drink, you know, like, oh, nobody will know. It'll be great. It was like these rose-colored glasses when I was drinking, right? Like it just got to the point where I needed to do it all the time. By the end of the classroom, one of the administrators had to pull me out and say, are you okay? Like you kind of need to go home. And then they let me drive home. But there was a 4-day break after that class. And I remember the shame of waking up the next day, like, oh, I got to face all those people again. Like, how am I going to do this? And I sat with that feeling for 4 days. I don't know how I got through it. I became really good at putting on a mask. So, but I'm in school. I move in with my new boyfriend who I had met at the local bar that I would always go to. And he was a superstar at this bar. Everybody loved him. He was the best thing ever. He would give the shirt off his back to a stranger. And I fell in love with that, right? So we move in together a few months later. And he had what I use the 80-20 principle with, right? So like 80% of the time, he was that great person. He was making you laugh. Like to this day, I always say things that he used to say to keep his memory alive. But that 20%, like he'd come home from the bar and I didn't know if it was Jekyll or Hyde. Like there were holes in the walls. There wasn't one door that was still on the hinges by the time our time together stopped. Yeah. I had all these 4 teeth or fake because of him. It was just awful.
Did he hit you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Pushed me down the stairs. It was awful.
I'm so sorry.
It was my first experience with God will do for us what we won't do for ourselves. So I ended up quitting acupuncture. This is when COVID first started because I had finished pretty much all my classes up to that point. But working in clinical, the board wasn't giving us a direct answer if hours with patients would go toward our graduation. So I'm like, I'm not paying 12 grand a semester for this shit. Like, so I pulled myself out and because I wanted to drink all day, every day and not.
Can I just double back a second? So the guy was abusive. And then you followed that with God was doing for you what you couldn't do for yourself. Can you tell me what those two events together mean? What did God do for you that you couldn't do for yourself associated with that relationship?
Yeah. So the crux of all of this was when I quit acupuncture school. There was about 3 months where we were just home alone together during COVID. So that October, it was a few days before Halloween, he finally gets a job. That's another long story. And his mom calls me a few hours later around noon. And she's so distraught. She says she's coming up right now. They don't know if there was no camera. They don't know if he fell and it caused a seizure, or he had the seizure that caused his fall. But he's in the hospital. I'm coming up right now. Now, up until this point, we had numerous screaming matches about going to treatment because I knew I had a problem. I knew it. I knew I had this sense of misery that I just couldn't explain, right? I always felt like I needed a guide. I needed to school for it. I loved being in school, but like I needed to learn like how to get this misery out of me and stop drinking. Well, rehab, duh.
That and he was saying the man who was hitting you and punching holes in walls was telling you that you need help.
No, I was telling him, like, we need to get help. And, like, his family was so wealthy, we could have gone to Ocean Drive.
Yeah.
I was telling him, like, about all these upscale places we could go. Like, it's not the horror stories.
So he had a problem, too.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's like the pot calling the kettle by saying, you need help.
Well, he didn't think we had a problem. He thought that this was just normal life. Like, and it would just become a screaming match. He's not going to rehab. Like, nothing wrong with him.
Sometimes that happens when you meet in a bar.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Was I surprised? No. But anyway, the day before he started this job, he only drank beer, not hard liquor. And he didn't do a hair of the dog the morning of. So,
sorry, what's the hair of the dog?
Hair of the dog is when you have like a shot or something in the morning just to get the withdrawal symptoms away.
Oh, I've never heard of that before.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, was it withdrawals? Withdrawal seizure? I don't know. But anyway, he hit his head so hard. He had to have a partial lobotomy. Like his skull was into his brain.
Whoa.
The doctors say, like, miracles happen, right? But they said it would be a miracle if he improves past a toddler-like state and he doesn't have control of his left side of his body. Yeah, so that was a major wake-up call. So I'm back in South Florida with my dad. No idea what I'm going to do. And then,
so coming back to what Corey asked, that's God doing for you.
I wasn't going to get out of
that. For yourself.
I truly don't think I would have, because still at that point, everybody else was right. Right. If I thought anything different from the people in my surroundings, like, well, I just had to open my mind a little bit. Right. I just, you know, they're right. I just need to change my perspective a little bit, fit myself inside that box.
Do you see what happened to him as being related to drinking? So that was a little bit of a wake-up call for you as well?
Not in regards to drinking. I still kept drinking.
Okay.
I still kept at it.
It was this thing that happened.
Yeah.
Just that she, like, you skated a bad relationship, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was your get out of jail.
Mm-hmm. So I'm back in South Florida. They're opening a Chewy's in Pembroke Pines. So I send my application in, just shits and giggles. I didn't think anything would really come of it, because at this point, like, my dad's not pushing me to get a job, you know, just because that was a major loss for me. As awful as he was, you know, I loved him, right? So I get a call from somebody I used to work with years ago. And he's like, Miss Sims, I'm your manager now. Like, do you want the job? Because he's managing the new Chewy's in Pembroke Pines. So they hired me on the bar, which was a very smart move. I lasted about 6 months, though. I'll give that to myself. So one day my manager drags me home. And the next day I call him and I say, am I fired? He's like, Lauren, I gotta. Like, there's no way. Like, you need help. And I had pulled that shit with every job I had had prior to that. I was showing up drunk. I was having all these excuses, but he was the first one to finally say, like, no, Lauren, like, you need to get some help. I can't have you here. So wasn't in school, really had nothing else. So I contacted my insurance. I said, who would you help with in the Tri-County area? I went, just highlighted the first thing on the list, and that's where I went. I didn't really look up anything or.
Inpatient program?
Inpatient program.
28 yep. days?
Yep.
Yep. Kudos to you who I would, my dad was offering me a bed. I would have gone home and kept drinking and I mean, that good for you that you asked for help and you recognize that. I think that's pretty incredible.
You also have to be ready, you know, and you had enough. And the guy at Chewy's liked you and he didn't really want to fire you, but he said, you can't be here anymore. That's a pretty bright line. You know, and here it is, you're at a waitress job, which you didn't think was the sum total of what you could achieve in life, and you couldn't do that. So it probably was a real wake-up call.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, deciding to go to rehab, I had no idea what to expect. Like, I was kind of in a fog of numbness. Like, but I get there. And I went to Beachcomber. It's an old motel that they turned into a treatment center. And I honestly don't know if any other, like I've seen other centers. I don't know if any other center would have worked for me.
I've heard great things.
There's something spiritual in those walls, mm-hmm. right? In those fences. Like most of it's outdoors. You spend most of your time outdoors. I mean, you'll be in the group room or something in like the house, but it's just so inviting to just kick up a chair outside and I loved it. I'm going to the beach. And on the 15th day, my therapist calls me in. He says, the bad news is your insurance isn't paying past today. I'm like, oh God. But he's like, the good news is we're going to sponsor you for the full 28 because I was doing so great. So upon leaving, I had felt so motivated and inspired and just so excited for the sober journey. You know, I'm a naturally spiritual person. So all that talk about God and the steps and all of that, I was elated to have found it. I thought I had finally found that school, that guide, you know? So I leave and I think I'm being very smart, right? My dad's going to, this was the Thursday before Memorial weekend. So I leave and I say, Dad, no, I'm not going to the lake house with you for the Memorial weekend. You know, there's a lot of drinking there. You know, some people are going to be there that are really triggering for me. Like, I thought I was so smart staying back, right?
Can I just ask, were your mom or your dad or your sisters involved in any way when you were in Beachcomber?
Very supportive.
Was there a family program? Did they get educated at all?
So my mom and dad would come to it. It was still amidst COVID, so nobody was invited on campus. Mm-hmm. But every Sunday they would have a Zoom meeting with the family where we could say hi. And then also, yeah, an educational program on like what addiction is, what to expect, how to support us. And yeah, I really loved them for that too. That helped with my family a lot. So I'm kind of the black sheep, right? Nobody.
Love the way you lit up though when you were like, you know, you were doing well, so they sponsored you, you know. It made me tear a little, like, you know, because having that someone give you that gift,
yeah,
right, is so powerful,
right? And I felt it extremely. But within hours of walking out those front doors, I was buying a bottle. I was found in a Publix parking lot, half a bottle next to me, keys in the ignition, just passed out in the front seat. And I came to in the back of the ambulance, to which the only thing I remember saying was, I cannot afford another ambulance visit. Like, this is number 6 in 2 years. Like, I can't do it. Oh, my highest BAC was 0.53. That was the time before that.
0.53.
So did they not introduce you, it sounds like to me, so I'm asking, to a 12-step program, like that there is something you need to do? Because at 28 days, our brains actually will do what we're trained to do, right? Like even if you desperately want to stay sober, sometimes your body will react, right, in this compulsive.
Absolutely. So I did try to find an AA meeting, but this is in Coral Springs, and it was still COVID was going on. Oh, so yeah, there wasn't too many in-person meetings. The few I thought I had found weren't there. So I guess they had moved them to virtual. And I still did stick with my virtual AA meeting, but yeah, I did still need more. And, you know, they had asked me to do IOP while I was there. And I was like, no, I got this. I got this, right. But as I mentioned before, connections with others was so difficult for me. You know, I've lived here since I was six, and I never, even in El Paso, I can't remember having a true connection with somebody, right? Like, who did you have to go to? Well, I had impressing my teachers, right? But I never had anybody really that I could talk to and feel completely loved and supported that I could trust, right? So I feel like this is another lesson that God was giving me, because, you know, I didn't need IOP. You know, I can do this Zoom meeting, like, it'll be fine. But I was still found with the bottle. And so I convinced these paramedics to drag me home. And my dad has that Ringer camera. So he sees paramedics driving me into the house. So he books it from down from his lake house. And the next morning, I'm sitting outside, just crestfallen, terrified beyond belief, because how I felt leaving to being consumed within just a few hours, like, just addiction was a monster that I really didn't comprehend. So next morning, I'm out smoking a cigarette, and Mike Flood calls me. He was the aftercare coordinator, whatever, for Beachcomber. And I was not going to answer that phone. Like, I'm in tears. I just don't want to talk to anybody. But it, like, was not me that put that phone next to my face. Like, it was really weird. And I'm like, yeah, I guess I'll do your damn IOP. I call it getting your master's now. Yeah. And then OP is getting your PhD.
So can you just briefly explain what OP and IOP are?
Oh, so IOP, it's less extensive than in-person. It's intensive outpatient. So you don't live on campus. You have your own digs. You have your own schedule, but it's just a few hours a week that you come.
Got it.
You'll do processing groups, groups with your therapist, stuff like that. And OP is less intensive than that.
Right. Okay. Got it. So that's outpatient.
Yeah. Yeah. So
especially during COVID, that was great because you actually connected with other people, whereas online, you know, virtual meetings, you know, you go, you don't go, and you don't feel quite as connected. By the way, you had mentioned, you said, you know, connecting with other people was always difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember you talking about those roommates, you know, the three or four people that you moved in with, those became like people you were really close with. And I would imagine in the 28 days, what happens to us in 28 days is we get really close with the people around us. You had a taste of that.
Yeah, we had our little group chat.
Right.
And everything.
So that wasn't enough when you left to be able to keep you going in that direction. Did IOP do it?
It could have been the IOP, but the next thing that came out of my mouth after I agreed to IOP, which also was not me speaking, because up until this point, I had only heard horror stories. I want to live in a halfway. I was nauseated after those words came out of my mouth. I'm living in my dad's multi-million-dollar house, like, not paying rent. Like, why the hell would I want to move into a halfway?
Now, for people that don't know what a halfway is, it's a sober living house where everybody in the house, not ready to go back home into the world, but also you're not in institutional care. It's kind of a step down to get you to the point where you can go out and not worry about ending up in a parking lot.
Yes. So for me, it gave me two things. One of it being the accountability, right? If I wanted a roof over my head that night, I couldn't show up drunk. And I remember I continued as a waitress when I was living in halfway. I remember leaving work. That was the biggest trigger for me because I was so used to leaving work, going to a local bar, shooting the shit with somebody, getting that shot and a beer, you know? And I couldn't do that anymore. I had to get excited about tea. Like, ugh.
But also at the bar, there's that connection piece.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
And it's like it's kind of like a fake connection, but when you're drunk, it feels like you just met your best friend, right? You know, so
exactly.
Like it's kind of, there's that aspect as well.
Yeah. So I had to grieve all of that, right?
Yeah.
So I had to go home to the halfway with my tea, with real people, right? It kind of felt like I was always in a fantasy video game world. And like now I had to be in with actual people.
An active member.
Like an active member of society, yeah. But that was the main thing that I think God wanted me in a halfway for, was to be able to forge those connections, right? Because like I could go to meetings all day, but there's so many outs there, right? Like you're not sharing a bathroom with somebody. You're not having to be honest and accountable with somebody.
How old are you at this point?
I'm 28. I got sober at 28.
Lucky you.
So I'd always heard about the golden year. So like I was born on the 28th of the month. And so it's supposed to be when you turn 28, like something very impactful is going to happen to you. And some people would be like, well, what if you're born on the first? Like, well, did anything happen when you were one? Like, anyway.
Well, maybe 10.
Yeah. But I got sober at 28. So I believe in that again.
I love that. Yeah. Those are those little like God shots where you're like, oh, you know, 28th and that's my golden year. So
yeah.
I like that.
So for somebody that's watching us and wants to know what advice you would give to them or even to yourself, what's the difference between Lauren today and the Lauren that left and, you know, just went, made a wrong turn?
So the biggest thing is actually following your intuition. And not just following, but being able to feel it, right? Like my intuition, even more times than the instance that I spoke of, has always been there for me. It's like my true self deep inside. Like I love her, right? And I want to get to know her. But I was drowning her out with all of the substances, you know, with all, and not even just substances, but my line of thinking. You know, my negativity, my belief system.
People pleasing.
Yeah, my people pleasing. So like truly being able to relax and let go and feel that. Yeah, it's done more for me than anything.
And making choices that are good for you as opposed to what is expected of you in order to keep everybody else the way, like the way things started with the households that you were in.
Exactly. And I say this all the time because it's one of my favorite stories. I said it at the reunion. When my first year, when somebody asked me what my favorite Christmas song was, when I had a response and it wasn't some bullshit like, all I want for Christmas is you. Like I cried. I was like, I actually know what my favorite Christmas song is. Like that was huge for me. You know, I was just this robot.
I also heard you say so much of your younger self was taught, your self-worth was tied to grades or your based on your job. Like if you were a waitress that wasn't good enough or what other people like, and now you're doing you, right?
Yeah.
And everything is like, you're accountable to your actions, like directly rather than what someone else thinks of your actions. If that, does that make sense what
sure.
I'm saying? Okay. And I just feel like that's the building self-worth. And maybe it's as a woman, sorry, Corey, but I find that sometimes like we tie our self-worth to our body or, you know, how much we make, did we go to school, what kind of job we have, what other people think, and like really tying your self-worth to like esteemable acts, right? And like how you present yourself and how you treat others and also how like you get sober and start making connections and all of these things. I think that builds so much more of a profound feeling of self-worth.
For sure. So I've learned it's not really what I'm doing, you know, whether I'm a waitress or I'm an RA or I'm an alumni coordinator. Like it doesn't matter what I do. I'm a teacher and I'm a lover, right? Mm-hmm. I love people. Like when I'm a waitress, like I would make it a goal, like one frowning table. Like if I could leave them, if they could leave happy, like, okay, then I was successful. I never really counted the money. And then as an RA or CA, like
which is
the BHT for Karen.
No, I know, but for people who are watching who don't know what an RA or CA means, like a counselor, okay, someone who's like helping other people who are in, you know, treatment, like patients, helping patients in treatment, I guess, right?
Yeah, you are there when the clinicians and the doctors and the staff is not there. You're the one that people talk to.
So I describe us as the moms and the dads. We make sure that they're safe, they're happy, they have what they need, and that they feel support while home.
I love that.
Yeah.
They feel heard, you know, yes, that they have somebody to sit there and listen, and that, you know, we care, we do care.
Yeah, and that's why I really love that role. It was just, how can I love them today?
Yeah.
You know, how can I be there for them?
So what's the best advice anyone's ever given you, and how has it impacted you?
The best advice I've ever been given is you cannot have what's meant for you in this life if you're not you. And that really touched me because my entire life I had suppressed everything. You know, what I wasn't good enough, right? Like, couldn't just sit on the couch. You couldn't half-ass cleaning anything, right? Like, you couldn't just be a waitress. And like my feelings like were never valid. Like if I felt angry or sad or upset or even ecstatic about something, I had to double check with somebody if I should be feeling that way, right? Like what's acceptable for me to express right now. And I've just truly found that letting go of that and being unafraid of who I am, you know, and, you know, it's scary finding it too, right? Because you're in that middle, the purgatory, you know, it's like, it's not what I thought I was and I haven't reached it yet. But yeah, just letting go, relaxing, letting
it
unfold. That's
the best answer to that question I've ever heard.
Yeah.
I agree. So I want to, you know, Corey kind of touched base on like how amazing you were this past weekend. So this past weekend was a Karen family reunion event. Mm-hmm. Where there were panels of speakers and all that. And you were there to greet everyone and to make everyone feel special and comfortable. And I thought that was really incredible, the way you just like worked the room and handled so many people. You know, Corey mentioned,
you know, there is a light that follows Lauren when she walks in the room. She may not fully appreciate that, but there, I know half a dozen people who preceded you in the role that you're in, and you're meant for the role that you're in.
Thank you.
I agree.
I feel that. I do. I'm really honored to have it.
Do you feel like there's anything you maybe haven't mentioned that you want to?
Maybe how I found Karen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like I said, my dad's my best friend. Well, he works over by Lifetime Fitness, and for the last 25 years, he goes at 5 a.m. Monday through Friday, every Monday through Friday.
Good for him.
So they call themselves a breakfast club, the others that are there too. So one day, one of his friends mentions that he's in recovery, and he's probably said it before, but it went over my dad's head. But now that I'm in recovery, my dad goes crazy. Like, oh my God, my daughter's in recovery. And so his friend says, well, if she's ever liked to work in treatment, like have her give me a call. And so I went to Beachcomber. Like it's so small. They don't have beach teas or anything like that. So I knew that there was a nurse and there was a therapist, but I didn't know what else treatment entailed, like what happened behind the scenes. So I'm thinking he's going to give me advice on, you know, certifications or schools, whatever, to get into the field. And he's like, no, I can get you an interview tomorrow. I was like, cool, right? I'm so excited because I was a waitress at Chili's, or food runner too, mostly a food runner down the street from Kiel. So I was so excited because like that wasn't really paying the bills. You know, I just felt like there was something more, right? I still had that line of thinking. Mm-hmm. So I go in for the interview. And I'm so excited. They love me. I'm loving them. It's going great. And by the end, HR asked, what's your driving history?
Ooh.
So I had to own up to, well, they were going to do a background check anyway, that, you know, I have DUIs on my record. And she automatically shut it down. She said, no, Lauren, we can't take you. Goodbye.
Actually, I thought that gives you the qualifications.
I was
going to
say,
everybody's done that stuff.
Right. Well, not only that, you know, where can you be most honest about like that stuff, except for
the honesty part, though? It was the fact that, you know, the driving record is, I mean, I guess she was interviewing for something where that mattered.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Because you do have to drive the cars.
The patients around.
Yeah.
I forget that was your first role there, because I'm thinking like, what do you mean? She doesn't need to drive us around. We're the alumni. But like now I'm. Yeah.
So I get into my car after this interview and I bawl my eyes out for like a good 10 minutes. And I look up and I say, all right, God, right now I'm just a food runner, but I'm going to be the best one they've ever had. I'm going to be the happiest. And you got my back. I put full trust that he had my back to pay my bills. And in the time, this was in December, in that time span from December to March, there had been so many times I prayed, God, I don't know how I'm going to make rent this week. Like, I don't want to have to ask my dad, please. Like, and I'm always grateful that he's been there. But anyway, the next day I'd get my schedule and I call my friend who works there. Like, why would they schedule me a double on a Monday? Like, there's no reason for that. She's like, well, Lauren, it's Martin Luther King Day. Oh, I made what I needed for rent plus groceries like that day. And like so many times stuff like that would happen. So like he truly did have my back, right? So March, I get a call from HR, Karen. And they say, you know, Lauren, when were those DUIs? They didn't ask me when before. So I had to go into my email when I was conversing with my lawyer. And I was like, you know what, Shelly? It was March exactly 3 years ago. Like and you have to have a clean record for exactly 3 years to be on their insurance.
Oh, I see. That's
so
why.
But it's like, how did she know to call? Like at that exact month, right? Like, yeah. So Karen has a very special place in my heart.
Shelly's also very special.
Oh, yes. Shelly.
But that is so cool. And it's so funny because I would have like not let them, I would have tried to force the situation, right? Like, oh, but like, you know, I have my own insurance. Oh, but you know, and you just let it be and you walked out with grace and you let God work for you in your life. Like he had before, really. Cause it seems like everything's always shown up for you.
Yeah. I actually did. It was Ben Williams, my dad's friend,
who's actually been on this podcast.
Yeah. I saw his,
but typically we probably shouldn't name.
Okay, so we can just say my dad's friend, I ended up texting him. I was like, well, maybe I can do overnight. I don't think there's driving for that. It's going to be an overnight, all right. But
he's awesome.
Yeah, and then in that role, I loved it because literally my job was to love those patients, you know? And so when I thought of the concept of changing a position, like I don't want to sit behind a desk all day. Like I couldn't imagine doing something that wasn't with them. So when this position came about, I got pretty excited. I didn't know what it entailed. I was like, but I got excited because it was, you know, with both. It was with, you know, while they're inpatients and then afterwards, right? So I can kind of like, in a way, be that mom for them in a way. But Stephen Brennan actually pushed me to, because I don't know, I felt like we were a team, me and Stephen. We became administrators at this point. And I felt like he was pushing me away. But I fit right in. I love everybody and I love it.
So. What's your biggest source of motivation? What gets you to bounce up in the morning and what kind of things do you really look forward to?
I mean, every day is an adventure, you know, it's like, what could possibly happen today? Like, what am I going to learn? Like, God, even like a few weeks ago, and it just like super hit home to me. It's like, we never know when we're going to learn something that inspires us or like hits home. But it's like the big book, like, God grant me the courage to change the things I can does not mean God grant me the courage to change my marriage or change my job or change where I live. It's grant me the courage to change my perception about those things. And that like, whoa, man. and it's like, I'm always learning, right? Like if I'm not working, I'm always reading, right?
I love that.
Yeah. Like, And I didn't talk much about my eating disorder, but I'm in a program now for health and life coaching. That's what I want to do. I want to do eating disorders, just because I felt like going through everything I've been going through, the alcoholism, the eating disorder, I felt like I always needed a guide. Like I needed somebody to show me like how to climb. I needed a Sherpa up Mount Everest, right? But I never had one. I've just been climbing it kind of myself. And I want to be that for somebody, you know, for other people.
I've suffered from an eating disorder and it came the exact same age you said yours came mm-hmm. about. I did the exact same thing you did. And so that's why I was like, wow, like a lot of things you've said, actually, I feel like we connect on many levels, but I think that's awesome that you're going to do that because, you know, the biggest thing with an eating disorder is like, you have to eat. So yeah. It's about your relationship with food and like having to find balance with that. And so I think I have found, someone who's helped guide me and everything. And that was my answer, to have someone help guide me. So I think that the fact that you want to do that is awesome.
Just want to say what strikes me is, you know, having our time together on Crosstalk is that the first part of your life seems to me what I got is struggling to try to make everybody else happy.
Yeah.
And it seems to me where you are today is exactly the other side of that, which is doing things that make you happy. Especially that, I mean, I'm still reeling from your answer about the best advice, but it's about finding out what it is you want, figuring out how to get there, and making yourself happy. And when you do that, it looks like, you know, everything around you changes. The whole world is El Paso.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really matter where you are because you're there, you're a sponge for information and you're growing every day. You're finding out new things. And I'm inspired by the transformation that path that you've been on. And I think hopefully somebody listening to this is identifying with the feelings that you shared with us. And I think it's just remarkable where you are. And I can't wait to be around to watch where you go, because I know you're going to go really to great places.
Yes, yeah.
I agree about the El Paso comment that you said, that everything becomes El Paso, because that's what's happened for me. You know, like I got happy down here in Florida, but now anywhere I go, like I bring that with me, you know?
Yes.
And it's the perception, the exact thing that you said. So we do, though, we ask, if you could go back and tell your younger self, you choose the age, something, what age would it be and what would you say?
I'd go back the 13 when I tell her that you're enough.
I like that.
Do you usually have something longer than that? Or
no, that's great.
You're so cute.
We can just slow the takedown so it takes longer to say the same words.
You're enough. Exactly.
But that's great. I mean, I remember you were on the bus. That was the moment that you picked.
Yeah. Nobody was going to love me if I didn't lose that weight.
Well, you certainly are enough.
Thank
100%.
You. 100%. Well, I found myself, you know, that took some struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah. These last 3 years were pink cloud lasted about maybe a year. But yeah, the last 2.5 have been real. Like, my eating disorder, I'm about 2 years in recovery from. And that's one thing that guided me to health and life coaching, right? Like I would love to get my master's in social work, become like a full-on counselor one day. But for now I'm doing the health and life coaching because I had hired a nutritionist. Like even though I knew everything about nutrition, right? Like I studied it. Like, I mean, I didn't get like a nutrition degree, but like I had spent since 8th grade on like really studying it, especially in college. Even when I was in acupuncture school, I focused on the spleen and the mechanisms of, you know, digestion. So I knew everything about the macros. I knew how digestion worked. Like I knew how the body worked. Like, but she was my coach. Like she was the one that turned those like conscious thoughts into my subconscious feelings. You know, like, why am I doing what I'm doing? So figuring that out was a game changer, you know, because I numb myself for so long. It's like, oh my God, like, I'm actually feeling things again.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, that's what I want to do for others.
How's your relationship with your sisters and your mom? I know your dad, it's great. He's local.
Yeah, my dad's local. We see each other all the time.
How about the others?
My brother and sister are also local. We get together time to time. My mom's up in Kentucky. Once my brother graduated high school, she went back home. So, and yeah, like night and day. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited. I feel more connected to you, and I love that.
I love where Crosstalk is going. We're every episode, it seems like from a qualitative standpoint, the interviews are gripping, and this was no exception.
Yeah, I had seen a lot of your shows, whatever you call them, before this, and I'm honored to be here.
Thanks so much.